Welcome to Let's Talk ETFs. I'm your host, Jason Kapoor, and I've been monitoring the investment space throughout my entire career. Here at Seeking Alpha, I'm an ETF strategist, and my role is to uncover and bring forward news and information to the investor community that is meaningful and actionable. Each week, a different guest and I will take an in-depth look at a particular aspect of the rapidly evolving exchange-traded fund space, with a focus on how investors can best utilize ETFs to reach their investment goals. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. This podcast is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Nothing said here should be taken as investment advice. All opinions expressed on this show are those of individuals expressing them alone. A full set of disclosures will be included at the end of this show. You can subscribe to Let's Talk ETFs on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or whichever podcast platforms you prefer.
For reference purposes, this podcast is being recorded on the morning of August 26, 2021. Joining Seeking Alpha today is our guest, Stefan Flegel, Chief Product Officer and Index at Qontigo. Stefan holds an MBA from the London Business School and has a bachelor's degree in economics from George Mason University. Prior to joining Qontigo, Stefan was the global head of indices and benchmarks at Thomson Reuters. Earlier in his career, he also was the managing director at IHS Markets and has held positions at Barclays and Commerce Bank. Today, we're excited to discuss our topic of sustainable investing and ESG ETFs with an expert in this space. So without further ado, I would like to welcome Stefan Flegel.
Thank you very much, Jason. It's an honor to be invited to join you for this podcast, and I look forward to our conversation.
Excellent. How is everything going for you this afternoon?
So far, so good. So far, so good. I'm back at home in London for a few days, and then joining my office in Zug again the following week.
Fantastic. So, Stefan, the way we usually like to kick the podcast off is by allowing our guests to learn a little bit of a deeper background to who you are. So would it be possible if you could provide our audience with a deeper introduction to both yourself and Qontigo and, you know, things of that nature?
Yeah, sure. A little bit about myself. So you already said quite a lot going back even to my university days. I was very glad that I was able to go to university in the United States at George Mason University, but do my postgraduate degree in London at London Business School. I think that has given me a good exposure to both the US culture as well as the European culture. Personally, I am German, and spent most of my life until I was 18 years old in Germany. As you mentioned, I joined Qontigo in December 2019. I was drawn towards Qontigo because it came out of the combination of two other successful and complementary companies, one Axioma Inc. and Stocks Limited. Deutsche Börse brought these two companies together in October of 2019, and I joined, as I mentioned, in December. The combination of these companies really allows us in indices to leverage the technology and the research done by Axioma to provide better solutions to our clients, including by leveraging their risk management capabilities, their portfolio analytics capabilities, and the Axioma Optimizer, which, especially in the ESG space, really allows us to do something which I believe is quite unique. That's what drew me to Qontigo. Before that, as you mentioned, I was at Thomson Reuters, which during my time there became Refinitiv, but I left prior to the acquisition by LSEG. At Refinitiv, I was responsible for the FX WMR benchmarks, a number of interest rate benchmarks, and equity indices. And prior to that, I was at IHS Markit, responsible for the fixed income indices and the credit derivative indices. So that gives me over 15 years of experience in the index industry across the major asset classes, fixed income, credit, rates, and also equities. I love this work. I love the work of indices. I love to work with clients and with my teams to make the markets more transparent, objective, and accessible. And indices and benchmarks are just an excellent vehicle to accomplish that.
Absolutely. And it appears that you got that robust background, 15 years. And it's exciting to understand that you've kind of worked through a wide variety of market areas. And I know today we're going to be speaking around ESG and sustainable investing. And I was hoping if you could provide a little bit more context to what ESG is all about. I know there are some separate components within ESG, but would you be able to give us a little bit more of an in-depth approach to sustainable investing and what it's all about to market participants that might be tuning in?
Yes, sure. I'd love to. This is an incredibly exciting space at the moment, sustainable investing. And I think driven also by the transition to a sustainable economy in which the world currently is. So I'd like to start off by saying that I personally prefer a little bit the word sustainable investing, which encompasses multiple types of inclusion of sustainable scores and ratings, of which ESG is one. But let me step back a little bit and see why sustainable investing is important for the investor, but also for the society overall. Sustainable investing is essentially the key enabler towards the transition to a sustainable economy. As an index provider, we see ourselves as having an important role as the bridge between the financial markets and the real economy. And as the real economy is currently undergoing this transition towards sustainability, the ability for us to provide indices that enable that transition by bringing transparency into that market and allowing these companies to raise funds for that really makes us an integral part in that transition, right? And it gives us a key role as that bridge between the financial markets and the real economy. That transition can only happen if it's funded. And at the same time, we also have found that investors are more and more employing sustainability aspects in their investment decisions. And if you think about it, that's especially on the retail, on the retail level, that's not very different from the way that individuals are now also basing some of their purchase decisions and around consumer goods, having sustainability factors or aspects in mind. And we see that is now also seeping over into the investment space. I mentioned that for me, sustainability is the kind of umbrella term. Within that, there are multiple ways to employ sustainable investing. And we basically separate three objectives, and that can be expressed in many different ways. But ultimately, at the moment, it's crystallizing that there are three broad objectives. The first objective is just to express a value. You know, individuals or institutional investors that just do not want to invest in producers of certain products. Examples of that would be, for example, exclusion of companies involved in the production of controversial weapons. Very popular exclusion criteria in some ESG indices. So that's one potential goal, expressing a value. The second one, which is very much related to it, but goes a little bit further, is the inclusion of ESG aspects to manage risks. And those types of, in order to do that to achieve that goal, we also see potentially exclusion of companies with certain product exposure, such as companies that have exposure to oil sands, or in Germany, we see very popular exclusion of power companies that derive revenues from nuclear energy. And this is a way of managing some risk, because investors see those products to be declining and potentially carrying high future liabilities. So that's the second aspect of ESG investing, which is managing future risk. And the third one, which at the moment is still in a nascent stage, but where we believe that will be the next phase, is investing to have a positive societal impact. So it's not, the first two are very much about what does the portfolio do to my money, and i.e. managing the risk. The societal impact aspect is more about how can my investment, in addition to providing a return for me, how can it also have a positive impact generally? Which, if you think about it, also, you know, will bring a return to the individual, because if we accomplish that transition to a more sustainable economy, that will have benefits for society in general, but also for each individual. So that's the third objective. Each investor approaches the process of sustainable investing slightly differently. You can probably tell there's a lot of different and overlapping terminology out there, lots of acronyms, lots of scores, ratings, companies that perform audits and deliver research. So at the moment, this space is still, you know, quite variable and diverse. But one of the challenges is to introduce more standardization. We see more regulations, more guidelines coming out, not always providing more transparency, but often being a little bit contradictory between and even within countries. But this is an important space, but it's not yet a homogeneous space. And so having a firm, an index provider or investment managers that understand the space well and can guide their investors to navigate it, I think is very important.
It's interesting because it is such a growing space and a new space to some level. And I was kind of curious to get your input on, what you would say is, with this boom in sustainable investing and ESG investing, both from, I guess you can say, an institutional standpoint and a retail investor approach. But what do you see the next kind of, I guess you could call it the 3, 5, 10-year trend, however you want to look at it from a macro perspective? But are we kind of at the beginning of the way investing might change for the better? Or is this kind of something that's just really a hot point, you know, in the moment today? You know, I guess I would say is, what's your viewpoint on sustainable investing, you know, looking forward, if you're a long-term investor for the next, you know, 7, 10 years, you know, what's on the horizons out there?
Well, this trend is still at an early stage, and I mentioned this a few minutes ago that there are still many different ways of looking at it. There are different goals, different values that underlie sustainable investing. But if you just look at the numbers, we on the one hand we see a massive growth in interest and in assets, while at the same time still being at overall reasonably small numbers. So just to give you an idea, there was a poll of over 300 European and US investors conducted by the Index Industry Association. In that poll, we learned that ESG assets are expected to grow to over 40% of portfolios over the next 5 years. At the moment, in the ETF space, only 4% of all ETF assets are currently in ESG funds. We also heard that 85% of fund managers, and in the US, it's even 95% of fund managers. So the vast majority of fund managers returned that ESG is a high priority for them. So we're looking at forecasted big growth in ESG assets. We're looking at asset managers and investors that overwhelmingly say that ESG is a high priority for them. Traditionally, we have seen already high growth. In 2020, the AUM have almost tripled in ETF versus the prior year. But on the other hand, at the moment, only 4% of all ETF assets are current in sustainable funds. So we are in that situation where there are the tipping point, I think, has been reached. There are, you know, almost 150 billion in ETF funds, but still very small compared to the overall pie. And at the same time, we have massive investor interest. So what we have seen so far, though, I mentioned before that, you know, we at Qontigo and at Stocks, we see different, multiple different goals or objectives when investing. These, so far, the vast majority of the funds have gone into what I would call traditional ESG funds. So those are funds that use ESG scores or integrate ESG objectives in order to express a value or manage a risk. These will probably continue to be the core of ESG investors and ESG investing, and we will continue to see assets flowing from traditional market cap ETFs and market cap indices into ESG, into these types of ESG. We will also see integration of some ESG aspects into what otherwise you would consider a traditional market capitalization fund. So the line between what is ESG and what is a market cap fund, there will be a gray area in between where we see market cap funds that still have some baseline exclusions, right? So market cap fund, but doesn't include companies that don't align with the UN Global Compact, or market cap funds that don't invest in controversial weapons. You know, very, very minimal kind of, I would say, minimal ESG integration. And so I would still call them a market cap fund with some ESG integration. And then all the way the spectrum to best in class firms or SRI firms.
It's interesting how it's such a, the space is we're at, I guess you can call it that infantile mark point, but you could almost see the writing on the wall where investor flow is going. And it's interesting that you highlighted only 4% of ETFs are currently within the in that space. So it would only seem logical that throughout the course of time, that's gonna, you know, develop. And I kind of wanted to roll into another point with you. I know we kind of touched a little bit about scoring systems and, you know, how you would rank an ESG number. But I wanted to understand, and maybe you could shed a little bit more light to our listeners on how measurements are being noted. I know if you look at a general benchmark, you know, S&P 500 ETF like SPY or VU, I know their scores come in somewhere around like 5.5 or 5.7, depending on which benchmark system you use in the United States. And that, I think, to a lot of people doesn't scream sustainability. So, you know, how is a scoring system or a rating system should be applied, and where do you draw the line of what really is a sustainable fund and maybe what is not? And I guess there's all different degrees and it's a preference by preference basis, you know, per investor. And I think that Europe's a little bit ahead of the curve. I think you guys have, if I'm not mistaken, some industry standards, whereas the United States, they're still, you know, kind of open market where a handful of rating firms are providing scores. But how do we kind of create that even playing field where we can all, you know, monitor everything from one standard?
Yeah, I think that's one of the big challenges of the industry, which is developing that one standard. You mentioned Europe. I think in Europe we have a competition of standards at the moment. And I think a lot of what you say, I think, probably refers back to what some people call greenwashing, i.e. showing a fund or a company that pretends to be green or sustainable, but in reality it's not. So for us as an index provider, I don't think it is it's not for us to decide what that standard is. And it's not for us to call a portfolio, you know, truly ESG or not truly ESG. So our approach has been to provide a spectrum of ESG objectives across a number of indices, and then let the investor decide what the right appetite for the investor is in terms of exposure to ESG, the quality of the companies in the index, and the tracking error that they are willing to have against the benchmark. So we essentially have two technologies or two methodologies to achieve that. The first one is exclusions. Or exclusion strategies. So that is a strategy where we take, you know, product involvement or ESG scores, and we exclude a certain percentage from the parent benchmark. And again, we offer a spectrum. In some cases, we offer some that are very strict or are quite lenient, and we only exclude, let's say, the bottom 20% of a benchmark. That satisfies most of the regulation, current regulation in Europe. In other cases, we exclude companies or we only take the leaders into an index. So that's one way, which is just the exclusion strategy or screening strategy. And that has a linear relationship between the number of exclusions and the tracking error versus the parent benchmark. And then we have what's called an enhanced strategy or a target ESG strategy. There we leverage our optimizer, and we are able to control tracking error versus ESG score. And that is where we actually go to the investor we work with an ETF issuer, and we say, what is the maximum tracking error that your investors in your ETF are willing to have versus the benchmark? And then we try to maximize the ESG portfolio score versus of that ESG index versus the benchmark. And we are generally able to maintain a tracking error under 1% while improving the ESG score of the portfolio by up to 50%. So you asked me, I think your question was about how do you define an ESG ETF and what does the score mean? And I think one good way of looking at it is to just compare this ESG score of an ESG index portfolio and compare that to the parent index and the parent benchmark. You will want to see a high or at least a double digit improvement of the portfolio ESG score in your ESG benchmark compared to the, you know, standard market cap benchmark.
Interesting. I appreciate that insight and analysis. And I also wanted to maybe jump into a little bit of Qontigo itself. I know that you guys have a handful of indices. I was hoping if you could kind of walk us through or maybe highlight one specifically that you think would stand out, you know, in that sustainable investing realm.
Yes. So I think probably best if I quickly say how we structure our indices. So as I said, so the first one is our enhanced, our exclusion strategies. The second one are our indices that employ an enhanced or a target strategy. Then we have climate benchmark indices and thematic indices. On the exclusion strategy, we offer a spectrum of minimal exclusions to best in class. And the names that stand out here are the Stoxx ESGX indices, which are licensed to ETFs. They have very minimal exclusions. They are for investors that essentially want to buy a market cap benchmarks, but want to exclude high risk product or high risk sectors. So we exclude companies that do not conform with the UN Global Compact. We exclude companies that are involved in controversial weapons and others. Go a step up from that. We have Stoxx ESG Broad Market. Those on top of the ESGX exclusions also screen out the laggards as far as ESG scores provided by sustainability go. And it goes all the way up to Stoxx SRI indices, which only pick the best in class in terms of ESG scores and also have a low carbon methodology in there. I think the more the really interesting indices are indices which we have more recently developed, and those are the Euro Stoxx 50 ESG indices, which, as I mentioned to you before, they exclude companies, but then they replace them and achieve a guaranteed higher ESG score than the parent benchmark. And then really important, I think, are our PAB and CTB indices. Those are the Paris-aligned benchmarks. Those are our climate indices, which are aligned with the European CTB and PAB directive regulation. Those are also licensed to ETFs, and investors in those can be guaranteed that their investment invests in companies that are on the trajectory to reduce, to achieve a 1.5% in 1.5 degree increase or a 2 degree increase in temperatures.
Great. Thank you for that. And for listeners that are tuning in, I'm sure we could look into which ETFs are tracking these indexes as well, so we can put some links to that for anyone that's interested. But I also wanted to kind of come at this conversation from a different angle. Not every individual out there might be so pro sustainability and ESG. What would you kind of say to someone that is, I don't want to say not a believer, but you know, they're focused on their bottom line return and not necessarily the sustainable aspect. You know, so outside of, I guess you can say, an ethical standpoint, you know, why would an investor or market participant out there want to be part of this area of the market versus, you know, a bottom line return and that's all they care about?
Well, I think to those investors, I need to say that ESG does not translate into lower returns. So they don't translate into lower returns, right? So if you look at some of our, as I mentioned before, one of the key investment objectives to integrate ESG in your process is to exclude, is to manage your risk. So some of our indices, or all of our indices, have some basic exclusions from a product exposure perspective that just reduce the risk of the portfolio in terms of liabilities. And this could be, you know, because of the exposure to greenhouse gases or exposure to products that could carry future liability, or also to potential controversies that tend to have a negative impact on stock price. So for these investors, I think an ESG index at what I would call the lower end of our spectrum that just focuses on risk management, such as our ESGX, would be the right vehicle. an alternative for that investor. And in some of those cases, you will even see that an ESG index performs better than the parent benchmark because of the risk reduction feature of ESG inclusion. So for example, our DAX 50 ESG index, which is the German benchmarks, the DAX 50 ESG index outperformed its parent index, the HDAX, by 5.7% between March 2020 to November 2020. So quite a significant outperformance. We've also done an analysis of our other ESG indices that are more in the middle of the spectrum. We call them the stocks ESG broad market indices. And we have found that not only did those attain a better ESG score, but the return and the risk profile did not diverge from those of the benchmarks. So to those investors who are looking purely at the bottom line, I say ESG is a risk management tool, if correctly implemented. And certainly over the long term, we expect that it will therefore be less volatile and avoid some of the major ESG-related risks that a simple market cap index may have.
Great. Yeah, thank you for that. So I think a lot of time individuals sometimes get wrapped up and they synonymously attached ESG with, you know, green investing, green energy. And it's not necessarily that at all, like you kind of outlined. And I think that sometimes that differentiation is not, made to light to individuals. They just kind of jump to that conclusion. So I'm glad that you were able to kind of really extrapolate on that for individuals out there. And I know that we are kind of getting a little bit to the tail end of this podcast, but I did want to just ask you, what do you think overall for sustainable ESG ETFs and indices investing as a whole? What do you think is really driving the momentum today? And what is also really holding the space back?
Well, the driving the momentum is absolutely clearly the client demand. And client demand is driven by the desire to manage the risk and by a strong belief in alignment between financial and societal goals. That's the primary driver. And that's also, if you look at the press, what many of the large asset managers and investors in Europe, but also in the US, are stating as the driver. Another driver, to some degree, is regulation, and the regulation being both the regulation of the real economy, but also the regulation of the financial economy, especially in Europe. You mentioned before that there are increasingly guidelines and regulations coming out that are meant to standardize investments and standardize the labeling of ESG, ESG investment products. And I think the better and more transparent the labeling becomes, the more demand we will see from investors into those products. But on the other hand, what is holding it back? I think to some degree, that same reason is also holding it back. There is some lack of trust by investors about many different rules and regulations that to some degree even contradict each other and are not very well aligned. And also the overall lack of standardization across the ratings. You could doesn't happen very much, but sometimes you just have different research methodologies being employed by different data providers coming to different conclusions. And so one size doesn't fit all. And as a consequence, we have decided to be an open platform and to work with multiple data providers and multiple ESG research houses so that we can really use the most appropriate ESG data provider for the specific objective that we want to express with an index. One size does not fit all, and having the ability to really provide tailor-made solutions or very targeted objectives using the most appropriate partner has also given us the opportunity to, I believe, come out with better indices than if you would try to express multiple ESG or sustainability objectives using only one data set.
Excellent. Yeah, and I like how you mentioned, in a way, what's driving it and what's pulling it back, or in some degree, it's the same thing. And I guess you could only expect that to some level on something that's relatively new, but yet has such an explosion behind it. It kind of spins its own wheels a little bit before it really gains that traction. But like I said, unfortunately, we are kind of rounding the podcast out, and I did want to kind of provide you with the last word. I know we did discuss a lot of information today. If there was anything else that you would like to outline or, you know, say to our audience, kind of give you the floor, and also where individuals can go to learn more information about yourself and also about Contigo.
Yeah, thanks very much. So I think there are two messages that are important to note. I think the first one you already mentioned, sustainable investing does not mean green investing. It doesn't mean just renewable power sources. Sustainable investing relates to the transition of the economy to a sustainable economy. And let's not all forget, a sustainable economy means that as a society, globally, we can continue to grow, and we do not have to hold back, and we do not have to stop consumption, because by definition, a sustainable economy means an economy that can continue to grow without negative side effects. So it is not about green investing. It is about investing in companies that are sustainable from a governance perspective, from an environment perspective, and from a social perspective. I think that's very important to note. I think the second one is to understand that there is a spectrum of investing options in the sustainable investing space, all the way from, you know, minimum risk aversion indices, all the way to, you know, what we call what you know, all the way to indices or investment products that also have a positive societal impact while still providing a return. And the UN Sustainable Development Goals are a good guideline for that. But I think those are the two things to remember. Sustainable investing is not giving up return. It's receiving the same returns that you get under market cap, and potentially even more, while still supporting the transition to a sustainable economy. So if you want to learn more about Contigo and about our indices, the best place to go, obviously, is our website, www.contigo.com. Contigo is spelled Q-O-N-T-I-G-O. Within Contigo, you will find all the information about our stocks indices and our overall sustainability efforts.
Excellent. Well, fantastic. And thank you for that final note. And again, we want to obviously thank Stefan Flagel, Chief Product Officer and Index of Contigo, for joining us today to speak on behalf of the sustainable and ESG investing space and how it's all wrapped up in the exchange traded fund marketplace and indices. And I also obviously want to thank our listeners for tuning in today. But until next time, this is your host, Jason Kapoor, signing off. And we look to hear back from you guys soon.